This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, back to the Talking Split Podcast. Remember to hit record this week. Did not remember to turn the sound up. So apologies to everyone on that one. Welcome back, Rob Calder, joined by Jenna O'Hay, Darren Best. Welcome to both of you for the pod this week. Figured it was time to have the Metro people back in. We've had country the last couple of weeks talking about errors, so kept you two out of it. Just had Coops and Zoe talking about the things they've screwed up in their coaching. Two-part series. Could have been five or six, as it turns out, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, if we were in this, it'd be a long list for us too. No one's perfect.
No, not at all. And that's kind of the thing, is we all make mistakes as coaches. It's just identifying and moving forward, which is why you're listening to the podcast in the first place. This is an opportunity for professional development out there. If you can leave a rating and review on the podcast, that would be fantastic. Like, share, retweet, follow along, all those sorts of cool things. You can follow along with the @TalkingSplit handle on Instagram and X. I'll put it out there early. I don't manage any of that. Like, I'm terrible at it. When you message on that, you'll get Zoe. Like, it won't be me. I can't handle social media. I'm bad at it at the best of times. It's just not me. So
I'm with you.
Bestie, I know you're fairly similar.
I follow one person on Instagram now. I do have an Instagram account.
Yep.
But, and that, well, one company. That's Basketball Victoria. That's it.
Company man.
Because I wanted to see our Giddy Daniels Cup stuff. That was it.
Yep, makes sense. Jenna, where are you at with social media?
Fan? All over it.
Love it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't get it.
Had to use it as part of my career.
True. Yeah. Very true. That
and
makes sense.
Now I get all my news off X. And
oh, it's a dangerous world. Yeah, you're going to start having to pay for it soon. And don't even get me started. I'm all for a conspiracy theory, don't get me wrong. But the social media one, it's not one I'm prepared to jump into. Are either of you readers by any chance?
Yes, if it's the right book, I guess. I know that sounds silly. You don't know until you've read it, but it's normally all from recommendations.
Yep. Jenna, what about
you?
Love reading. Oh, you two are going to be fantastic then, because we are starting a Talking Split book club next year. So it is all about, if you have a book recommendation for coaches out there, send it in, give us some notes, we'll read it out and we'll get all the other coaches reading. Coops is all about this. Zoe, not so much. Zoe's like, maybe audiobooks might be our best chance, but he's not a reader by any stretch of the imagination. So we'll be tapping into you two at various stages. Any preference on topic, Jenna? Like, what do you go looking for?
Oh, I go through phases of, different genres.
Yep, makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Bestie, you have a really weird mix of, like, children's books and...
Well, at the moment, it's a lot of children's books, but that's for my daughter. The same.
No, I wasn't casting dispersions.
And over and over again. No. Yep. But it's typically mostly around coaching, to be honest. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, not necessarily basketball, but just coaching in general, yeah.
That makes sense.
The audio books are a good one for us coaches that spend a lot of time in the car, though.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you get the same out of the audio books as you do the physical books?
I don't know, but I do think if you get it completed, just get it done, find a way to get it done.
Worst part I have, like, with audio books is I'll hear something as I'm driving. It's like, I've got to write that down. It's like, I can't write that down because I'm driving and I don't want to pull over. How do I take this note down? Those sorts of things. So if someone's got an app out there that can actually have me grab some audio and remember it, I'm here for it. But unfortunately, I've got nothing. I just use a highlighter in my books. And
there's nothing like a physical book, is there?
Kind of cool to just sort of sit there and say, hey, I'm done with it. And you close, like, you physically close the book and it's done. It is a nice feeling. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite there yet, as it turns out. All my books are very big letters and... You know, it looks a lot more impressive when you finish this thick book and it's like, no, it's just size 28 font. Like, don't worry about it. So the other thing that we've spoken about...
Or pop up. That's the world I'm living in with my daughter at the moment. Yeah, pop up books.
They're getting more and more intricate, I must admit. Like, some of the stuff that you can get through there isn't too bad. The other thing that we have spoken about a little bit over the last couple of weeks is a European coaches study tour. So obviously looking at that late next year, we've had about a dozen people reach out so far and say, hey, keen, they'd like some more info on it. So if you are one of those people that hasn't hit me up yet on the email, shoot me through something. We can start costing that out with prices and those types of things. So at the moment, it's looking like Spain, but we might get to a point where it's like, hey, let's just detour a little bit. Just trying to think of my geography. Northeasty, and it might end up in Italy or somewhere like that as well. Like, who knows, depending on what it sort of looks like. So if you do have any interest in that, please let us know and we can start having a look at that too. All right, topic this week. What to teach and when to teach it. This is one that we get asked a fair bit, in all honesty, from coaches out in the wilderness that have been thrown into a coaching job with very limited resources, knowledge, experience, or anything along those lines. It's just like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm trying to survive every week and get them through a 60-minute training session without just breaking the kids or having to deal with the trauma of kids running around crying or punching each other or something like that, which does tend to happen at our junior practices a little bit, it turns out. So we're going to just discuss a little bit about this, and we've already had just a little bit of a brief chat off air before we started with this, because this does change from age group to age group. So, Bestie, you're very pro a skills matrix in this space.
From a program standpoint, yep. I am, yeah. So we had, well, David Munns from, he was at BTAS and obviously does a lot of stuff for FIBA. He shared with me one that he had created many years ago, and I sort of adapted it to when we were at Casey around our system of play. I just think it's probably more for the people in charge of a program than necessarily individual team coaches, I would think.
Yep.
Because as mentioned before, we would clinic our Sunday practices. So it was just good to go back and check to see, are we ticking off some things as a program, not necessarily from an individual standpoint. And I know you and I had a brief chat about that off air around, should we force an individual to move on if they're not necessarily ready to do that, which I don't think you should. But from a program standpoint, you need to be making sure you're heading in that right direction. Yep. I think that's where it's really beneficial.
Yep. And was that introduced Refine Master? Were they sort of the checkpoints that you had along there, or was it just as simple as they need to know this?
Yeah, it was more around what would be ideal.
Yep.
You know, so we had different categories around, you know, movement, IQ, you know, then obviously skill, that type of stuff as well. Yep. Yeah.
That makes sense. So, I mean, Jenny, you've been in the role for a little while now. You're starting to see kids coming through that have potentially come from club and association land. You guys have your six pillars that you kind of mark kids off against. Has that lined up fairly well for things like talent identification and knowing where kids are at coming into the programs?
It's a real mixed bag, if I'm being honest. Coming in with pretty fresh eyes, it seems to be, yeah, there's some kids who are obviously elite in some areas and then lacking in others, and then completely different for kids from other associations. So, yeah, I feel like it's a really mixed bag coming into this.
And it is. And it's a bit of a risk, I suppose, we take with coaches too, is we don't want to just develop the same type of kid everywhere. Like, we want those swings and roundabouts where, you know, some kid is an elite shooter but a terrible defender. We don't want terrible defenders, but, you know, just not so great on the defensive end. You'll get some kids that work their tail off defensively but can't throw it in the ocean out of a boat. Like, it's those types of things too. There's going to be some variances along the way, but it's a good check-in point, I feel like, and the six pillars that you both work from, obviously, is a nice way to sort of know where you're at. And I suppose for a lot of the kids that we have out there, 1v1 offense and defense is going to be front of mind for a lot. And what does that look like, and how do you unpack that as well? That's going to be the challenge, I suppose. So under 12 kids, like, so we'll go 12 and under, because we're obviously aware that some have like under 9, some have under 8, some have under 10. Well, I'm not delving into that well, but under 12s, what are the big things that you would want being taught in under 12s, Jenna? It's such a wide thing. Like, they've got the entire career ahead of them, effectively. What are the things that you would focus in on with an under 12s athlete?
Yeah, I think you need to start using both sides of the body. You don't want to just focus on their dominant hand.
Yep.
So I think that's really important. I think as kids go through, you can see that they're not so much working on their other side of their body. So I think that's key. I think defensively, closeouts has been a big one that we're noticing is lacking across all age groups. So I think the earlier we can start teaching the correct technique and really honing in on that at club land, I think is really critical, just from what I'm seeing on the floor at camps. Yep. Across the board.
Yep. What are your big things on a closeout? Just like, I mean, you hit on closeouts, what are the big things you want to see on a closeout?
Yeah, I want to see, well, we talk about taking away the rhythm three at under 12 level. I think it's more about getting
They'll shoot it. Yeah. Not always with confidence, but they'll shoot it.
Yeah, and then bouncing back, having your feet outside of the offense's feet, and then being able to not so much slide, but jump in front and not just open up defensively. I think we're giving straight line drives a lot, rather than being able to bounce back and then react to where the offensive player is going. Yep. And then, yeah, trying to stay in front, take chest blows if you can.
Yeah, anyone that's seen under 12s recently would know it's all drives. Like, it's all drives, it's all layups, it's all fast break basketball and those types of things. What would you be looking at, Bestie, from an under 12 perspective, and how would you sort of implement those teachings as well?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, great start from Jenna on those things. So all of those plus,
yep.
The biggest thing I feel is the importance of understanding practice habits and under 12s, and then them coming away with a thirst for more. You know, I've had some people say to me before, as a parent, if you pick your child up from basketball, you should ask them, what'd you learn? Did you have fun? Do you want to go back? You know, that type of stuff. So if they're not learning anything, they didn't have fun, they don't want to go back. Like major red flags with where they're at right now. So at under 12s, your job is to inspire them to learn how to practice, want to practice more, you know, and love the game. I think that's important. So organization, all of that, because that'll then further help their skill progression and understanding of how to play as they move through ages. So if you can set that earlier, you know, that is key. From a individual standpoint, I think Jen has touched on most of it, but the biggest one from a team concept would be just floor balance. You know, like get away from the swarm of bees around the ball. You know, just an understanding of, you know, we have our, you know, the five Ds. You know, I think it's still true. Like, it's not everybody uses it anymore, but I think, you know, the drift, the diag, the drag, the dunker, you know, the driver, I think all of that stuff is good. I think an understanding of a relationship with the person that has the ball, when to move, how to move. If you can get that done throughout a year, that is like a massive tick.
You've done well to nail the 5D straight away. I always forget driver. Like, I get everything else right, but always forget the driver. But it's very valid because, like, realistically, under 12 basketball is dribble penetration focused. Like, we know what it looks like. It's like a track meet most times. Like, if you have a left-handed kid in under 12s, it's almost like cheating. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, there's this whole other side of the floor that they can go on that we can't. Yeah, it's how it works. You got to work both sides of the body. And I think watching a lot of junior training sessions, a lot of the stuff is done on the right side. It's like that's how they'll start it. They'll do a layup drill or a little drill to start off their practice. Right-hand layup, right-hand layup, right-hand layup. Okay, that's fine, but make sure you go to the left as well, because there's a reason the lefties look a little more developed early on, because they get all this practice on their right side, but they still got their left hand is being looked after in that space. So if you can get something done with floor spacing in under 12, and we know what it's like, Beast of the Honeypot is absolutely what it looks like. Wherever the ball is, there'll be 10 kids within about a 4 foot radius around that thing. It's a nightmare to try and get them to sort of understand space. And look, you can be the greatest coach in the world with unbelievable patience and talk about spacing, but the kids aren't going to pay attention to it. They're just going to run to wherever the ball is. And there's part of that you kind of like to, like you like the see ball, get ball mentality, but trying to teach them, hey, while you're there, they can't be there or they can't do anything now, that's bloody difficult. Like, how have you gone about teaching that, bestie? Because that's not easy to do.
Well, first of all, the reduction in the ball size has helped.
Yep.
Because they can throw it further, they can shoot it from further, all of that stuff. We actually went as far as putting tape down on the floor for the five out floor spots. So I would often say if you're not driving or cutting, you need to be standing on one of these.
Yep.
You know, so don't get caught nowhere.
Yep.
Okay. So that's how we addressed it.
Yep.
Wasn't always perfect.
Yeah. Do you remember playing in under 12s?
I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I didn't start basketball until under 16s. Yeah, I was a soccer kid.
That's okay. Yeah. Do you remember playing under 12s, Jenna?
It was a long time ago. Yeah.
Don't age yourself too much. Like, you're not going too badly there.
No, it was a long time ago, but yep. No, I remember on 12s.
Do you remember like anything about like what the game looked like then compared to what it looks like now?
Yeah, I remember bottom age under 12s, we ran flex. So
really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We were very much like we were spaced out. There wasn't very much dribbling per se. It was more movement. So I remember being, quite spaced out and then getting wide open layouts when I cut off that.
Yep. Jenna was the stud under 12 kid that just racked up points everywhere. Thankfully it transitioned. But I mean, that's an interesting point though, because you look at something like flex, which does actually have a post. And I think talking to a lot of under 12 coaches now, they're all in that five out philosophy, which is fine. There's absolutely no issue with that because you're not pigeonholing kids into you have to play in the post and you can only play in the post. You're a point guard, those types of things. I think there's relevancy to it. But you do run the risk of your five out almost becoming too structured, where it's like it may as well be a set offense now. There's no reads involved in it. And I mean, flex is probably the ultimate read offense when you look at it from that end, because you do actually get some screening action, which we don't see a lot of in under 12s. What was the, I won't age myself too much, but I remember running like one of my first under 12 teams I ever took when I started coaching, like running a little baseline play that had a flex cut in it. And it was like cheating. Like it was ridiculous. Like one flex cut in under 12s and you will get open and wide open because everyone just watches the ball. They have no concept of where anything is. not advocating for flex in under 12s before anyone comes at me
in
the comments.
Neither am I. That's just what we did.
There's nothing wrong with it, but it does teach floor spacing. So from that end, you do get your corners filled. You do get nice spacing on the perimeter as well. So I like the idea of tape on the floor. Like we did that with the first showcase or jamboree or whatever it was with the Metro kids as well. Like we had a reduced three-point line in there as well. Tape on the floor. There might have been another rule. Ball wasn't out of – like the ball didn't have to be checked before it came back in. So, like, you had kids sprinting
love
to the sideline, get it and go. I think it's in, like, one of the Spanish leagues.
Yeah, I was watching it.
Wally actually said that that's how it used to be.
Yeah, right.
In the games, like real games. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, we can age him, that's fine.
Yeah, but he said that, and he said that sometimes there would be a little bit of interference from opposition parents on the sideline.
Hold on to it for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cheap stations, of course. But, I mean, it's a cool concept for mine. Like, the amount of time – I've seen a couple of clips from when they were using it in the Spanish leagues. The amount of times the big just gets on their bike now because it's like, hey, I don't have to wait for the ball to get checked and the D to get back. I can just go and the ball finds them. Like, if you run, you get layups out of this. I actually wouldn't mind revisiting this a little bit. That's going to be tough to get over the line. But
I like the idea.
I think it's a kind of a cool concept.
It would be very interesting on a Friday with so many courts next to each other now and the ball like rolling onto the next court and some kid like running onto the court and just throwing it, all the way across halfway through. Pushing a kid out of the way that's playing the other game to get the ball. That'd be great.
That would be fantastic. But it is something to seriously look at though, because it will speed up the game a little bit. And I know the country crew are having this problem. I'd be interested to know if you are as well. Do you have problems with kids playing fast enough? Like, are they a little slow in terms of moving from defense to offense, or are you finding that their transition's actually not too bad?
It can always be better. Yep. I'm not saying it's terrible, but I would like to see it to be better.
Yep. And is that on the guard or the big are you finding? Like the bigs or wings, whatever you want to go with?
Everyone.
Yep. That's all right. I'm content with the broadside. It's okay. Like, I think everyone can run more. That's the, kind of the moral of it. And I think that speeding up off the sideline might actually be a pretty cool way to get it done. Where are you at with presses in under 12s? Like, is it worth teaching, Bestie?
Ooh, loaded question.
Yep.
I say no.
Yep.
But unfortunately, you kind of need to, and we've spoken about this before, unless you're really creative in teaching your press breaker, you need to play against it in order to have some success, because so many teams do it.
Yep.
You know, so I don't think we should be doing it in under 12s, but you almost have to, unless, like I said, you're creative at ways to teach your press breaker through small-sided games, because you've got to get reps to play against one.
Yep, absolutely. The old arrow press is the one that we see the most, that 1-2-1-1 with a little bit of a face guard on the better guard and those types of things. It is an issue. And it is something that, as coaches, we may only get a half court for our training session. We've got to find ways to work on getting our kids to be able to get open, to get that first catch. And that's so hard to do. Like when they're, you know, these under 12 kids are tiny. Like they are small. The size 5 basketballs helped, for sure. But they are small kids and they're not used to physicality, I feel like it. Like, Janet, what would you be teaching kids trying to get open in under 12s? Because a lot of the times they'll do the old, you know, you stand on that elbow, one goes and screens for the other and they just try and get open and you hope for the best that the defense kind of gets a little bit confused. Is there anything that you would sort of try and promote the players do in that space?
Oh, Tom Maher always taught us the swimming action and step in front and to really hold them off and not move until the ball's in the air and then go and meet the ball.
Yep.
There's lots of ways
to
get open, but you need to, I think you can be more physical with it.
Yeah, and that's from the screener's perspective, but obviously don't go until the screener's set guards. Like, you've got to be a little careful there because no one dislikes a moving screen more than the coach. But it is one of those areas where I think they've got to be okay with contact, and that starts in under 12s. Like, they've got to be used to hitting a body on a screen or using a screen a little better. That is a way, I think, to start teaching structure. Like, and I agree with you, Bestie, the small side of games is 100% the way to go with that. Just, can you play 3-on-3 to half court and then check it back and play back the other way or something along those lines might be the way to get that done. So they get used to knowing where the space is, where the passing angle is. Are they aware that they can run the baseline after a score? You know, a lot of under 12 kids wouldn't have a clue. Like, I was talking to an under 18 kid like 2 weeks ago and he's like, you can do that? Yes, mate, you can, like, after, but only after a score. Like, don't do it if it's been, like, a violation or something like that. So there are ways around it, I think, in that space. As we get to 14s. So, Bestie, what would you start looking at from a 14s perspective, knowing what you've taught in 12s? Like, where would you layer the next one in to 14s?
Yeah, well, obviously, the if we go from a skill perspective now, I think you should have, you know, obviously shooting, we talk about it being the number one skill, and I think there should be an age-appropriate focus for each age group as a general guide. So we had Dave Love come out and do some stuff. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, everyone having a focus for their shooting, but I think from an age group perspective, under 12s, you should be just be working on their feet, like their stance, and then under 14s, maybe it's their hand position. You know, so slowly it's like it progresses. And I think that is the next one for under 14s. It's the shot mechanics needs to be really dialed in at that point. So we've spoken about this on other pods. Make sure you go back and listen to them, like the teaching points on shooting. But that, and then obviously, yeah, just continuing to build on the team, like an understanding of relationship between you and the ball, you and your teammates. But then obviously team defense as well is important.
Yep. What would you start focusing on from an offensive structure, I suppose? Like, would you start to introduce things like handoffs, on-ball screens, those types of things?
Yeah, probably try and limit the on-ball screens. Handoffs, like, we are going towards more the, like, throw it and get it back action. I think it's also a great pressure release if they are pressured. The guard with the ball is pressured. Definitely a little bit of that. Some away screening would be fine. Yeah, that's probably enough, I think.
Yep. Completely agree with the try and get away from on-ball screens. It's like, I know it was a Lono thing for a lot of years there. It's like the on-ball screen is the crutch of the imbecile, so to speak. And not that we're calling players imbeciles, but there are a lot of players that do rely on an on-ball screen to get open. It's can they create, and thinking from a game perspective, the least guarded person is usually the one that's just passed it. Like, once they get it out of their hands, everyone turns and looks where the ball's gone. That's a great time to go and cut again. And we saw, ironically, the Spanish team was fantastic. Like, Ricky Rubio was phenomenal at shot fake, get the defense in the air, pass it rather than drive it, but pass it and then get it back, because he's created such a long closeout now, forces rotations in that space. So getting away from the on-ball screen would be a massive win for mine in that under-14s age group. Jenna, what would you start looking at from a defensive perspective at 14? So you spoke about the closeout in 12s. Let's say that we're going to still have to focus on the closeout in 14s.
For sure. There's
a very real possibility on that. Is there anything else you'd start to implement defensively with the 14s group?
Yeah, I think that's all like the team defense stuff that
yep.
Bestie touched on. And then I think also the full court
yep.
man defense. I know we spoke about trying to limit pressing in under 12s. Yep. I would also be trying to limit it in under 14s and really understand the floor spots and where you should be to help out
yep.
your other teammates. So I know at FDP intro camp, the plug position in full court defense was it seemed to be a very new concept for a lot of my girls. I don't know how it was with your boys, but that was, yeah, a concept that I think we need to continue to teach at Clubland, because they didn't seem to understand that very well. So the full court man, trying to stay in front and contain, and then, yeah, your floor positioning off the ball.
Yep. Well, I think the plug one is like, oh, my man doesn't have it. I'm good. I can just run with him in the backcourt. Yeah, that's the buddy running thing. It's, you know, at every level. Every level, even seniors, like, it's something that needs to be addressed. Jenna and I had a really good conversation, I think last Tuesday, about closeouts and opening up, you know, on the bounce and all these types of things. And I feel an understanding of off-ball positioning, whether you're helping or not, depending on your team rules, moving on the flight of the ball, all of these types of things are really important that help go towards then having a good closeout. You know, like, if you're in the wrong position before the ball is passed and all of that, you're then lunging at the ball, you're putting yourself in a, you're either giving up the three or you're, you know, giving up a blow by. So you need to work on ways to understand where you want them to be off the ball. So I know, like, for example, on the boys' side, where our off-ball position is a high flat triangle, right? So you need to work on ways to get that done. We one-way close out. You know, Jenna and I had a conversation, and I think it's really valuable to when you do your shell drill. You know, we know the kids always whip the ball around so fast on offense, and it's just, you know, doesn't matter who you are defending, like it's not going to happen. So I actually don't mind them just slowly rolling the ball along the ground to each other to see, like, when the ball is here, you should be here and that type of stuff. You should be arriving as the ball arrives. And I know with our under 20 Navy team, the first camp we had on the weekend, just an understanding of stunting, you know, like non-existent, you know. So, you know, all of those things needs to be a priority for under 14s. Defending a cut, maybe.
Yep.
Defending a cut.
A fair bit of that.
Yeah, we do that in FDP now. Like we defend the cut and also the second cut. So if we can paint a picture, if we've got players on each seam and one on each like wing, or, you know, maybe near the break, if it's a pass and cut, normally we can defend that first cut, but it's then the second cut from the wheel around because their player just stays in a line with them as opposed to getting further across to, you know, jump to the ball type of thing. So an understanding of how to move to your help position, what your help position is, when you help, when you don't help, all go towards hopefully making your closeout better,
yep.
I think, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. In the full court, what is your preference at the moment? Are you, because I know, and again, I'm way aging myself out of this thing, but like in 14s when I was previously coaching this, so over a decade ago, it was all about how many times can you turn your player in the backcourt. That was kind of the thing, and it's no longer the thing. Like, what are you emphasizing now in that one bestie?
Well, I think we added like killing alley drill to the list of things you should never do, like including three-man, four-man, and five-man weave, right?
Yep, get rid of it.
Let's throw the ball backwards and run behind someone. Yeah.
Sort of the gets-ish type action.
Yeah. So we pin to sideline now. I think, don't get me wrong, there is a time to turn, definitely, but it's more if you're sending someone to go and hit it and hit for us means trap, right? So if you've got a physically dominant and really good on-ball defender, you can have some success with just being erratic on the ball at low levels. With us, we try to teach the kids what's going to work as they move up to elite levels. And the reality is you just don't turn really good guards over as the primary ball defender very much. Like you a little bit, but it's probably more you put your team and yourself at a disadvantage by doing that because it opens up the floor and then they just get into like a transition game. So our main goal is to just make them bounce it over halfway. If anything, throw it backwards or across, not down the floor, and to chew shot clock. You know, that's, and I know in under 14s, the shot clock doesn't start till the ball gets over halfway. So that's a hard pill to, or, you know, it's a hard thing to sell, hard pill to swallow, whatever, however you want to say it. But for us, we want to pin it to the sideline, deny the kick ahead, plug the floor, make them bounce it, wear them down over time. And then maybe in the fourth quarter is where some of those errors will start to happen. And if you're in those positions off the ball, that then allows us to add in some disruption stuff. So the guard is thinking, are they going to come? When are they going to come? You know, because it's the same old thing. If you're in the same sort of thing all the time, good players will figure it out. So we feel getting into those off-ball positions in your D-trans helps you then be able to do some things depending on where the ball is on the floor, what the time score situation is, all of that. So variety, as long as everyone's on the same page, helps with that.
Yep. You know, you see a lot of the pro-level guards in this particular NBL, WNBL. Who are the best ones that you've seen up the floor defensively of just pinning it to a sideline? So if there are coaches out there or players out there listening, who are the ones that they should really go and have a look at that are just elite in this space?
I think Christy Wallace comes to mind. I know she's injured at the moment and not playing, but once she's back on court, I think that she is elite at that. She's up, she's pinning it to the sideline, she's physical with it. She would be the one I would be watching.
Yeah, she is. And just super high IQ, doesn't gamble on stuff she shouldn't gamble on as well. And that's, I mean, it's a taught skill. Like, I mean, there's some innate stuff in there, I feel like, for sure. Like, she's obviously a high IQ player, but she who read on when to go, when not to go, who she can kind of bully to a lesser extent too. Like you see when she has to guard the backup point guard coming in, like her eyes just light up.
She's up and more aggressive. She knows that she can really dog them. But, yeah, yep. Some of those more elite, she's got a bit more spacing and just pinning them to the sideline and keeping them there. So, yeah, she's definitely top of mind for who I think is elite at that.
Yep. So how do you go about – because 14s is this weird age group where you have the early developers that have gone through that are just physically dominant and you can't do anything about them. Like, you can have the best plan in the world and you have the best skills in the world. When you get a random 6'6" kid roll through the door in under 14s, which does happen more than we probably take credit for, like, how do you keep an eye on the long-term players in that space and just make sure they still have a chance to compete?
Well, you've got to sell the story to begin with, like, of what can happen in the future.
Yep.
And then I guess, you know, there's a really good example of it this year at under 14 club nationals. So... Logan have a really, his name has escaped me, but he actually came last year as a double bottom major, I think, to play in that Queensland South SEC group.
Yep.
And I have to say, he was quite impressive throughout the week. He was really poised. He was, you know, everything was thrown at him. His passing out of, you know, situations was really good. But for those kids, you have to say, like, this isn't going to work long term, you know. Maybe, like, we've spoken about biobanding before.
Yep.
You know, I'm a big believer of that. I know competition-wise, there's going to be political problems with, you know, having kids play up or down or whatever it might be. But as a program, if you've got that big early developer, you need to have conversations with your DOC around maybe having them practice with an age group up, at least one practice, you know, a week, so they can see that some of that stuff doesn't work as you get older. Yep. That's probably the best way to have them do that.
Yep. Or have two older brothers that just beat you up and make it difficult for you as you're a player coming through, Jenna. Would that be fair?
That works great.
That works fantastically. but it is one of those areas where you do have to get tested against old. So if you are fortunate enough to have a kid like that, I think the idea is, right, test them higher. Like you say, was great at passing in that space. Yeah, because they get double teamed all the time. They have to be good at that. They can do it in their age group because they do it up an age group. So it's developing the IQ around that as well and trying to find ways to test them mentally as much as you do physically in that space. So under 16s, we're jumping into – Jenna, zones have come into under 16s, which are like the easy rollout for everyone during grading in under 16s because they haven't seen it for 4 years potentially beforehand. So you throw a zone in there and all of a sudden everyone's offense comes to a screeching halt. What should coaches be looking to teach against the zone in particular – to at least have some levels of success when they first see it? And don't say just shoot half-court threes. Like, because that's every point guard's solution to every zone that's ever been rolled out.
Well, the best way to beat a zone is to beat it up the court.
Yep.
So don't let them set up.
Yep.
So if you can play really solid defense and box out and rebound, which I think is an area that also isn't terrific, I think the second and third efforts offensively are really great, but our box outs are...
Yep.
Not where they should be. I think we have a lot of ball watchers rather than finding a man. So I think, or a woman, whatever you want to say, a player. So I think it's, playing good, solid defense that we've been teaching in under 12s and 14s, boxing out and rebounding and trying to beat the zone up the floor.
The trans stuff is just so vital, isn't it? Like, I know we keep coming back to it, but we have to. Like, our players need to play faster. They need to play at almost that breakneck speed where they're trying to make a million decisions a second based on what's going on in front of them, but they're only going to get smarter by doing that. Like, they're going to – I heard someone talk about it once. It was about – I think it was their first year at college versus their second year at college. And it's like, oh, look, your first year wasn't great, but your second year was very good. Like, what was the change? Did you spend more time in the gym? Did you just get better athletically? And it's like, no, it's not that I got faster. It's that the game slowed down. Like, I'd seen it at that point where it was just chaos up and down and I couldn't comprehend what was going on. But the more I was around it, the more it's like, okay, now I get it. I get where the gaps are. I get where the spacing is. I get, you know, when to push versus when not to push. And I think it's something that's really hard to teach as well is, yes, be safe with the ball, but it doesn't mean you can't run with it. Like, it's okay to play fast. And, you know, there are tons of players I know we've spoken about him before, Bestie, Jordan Crawford from TAT. Like, that guy plays at a ridiculous pace. And there are times, like, if I was on the team with him, one, I'd drop any pass he threw to me. But two, I would have no idea where he's going, but he seems under control despite the speed.
Yeah, I think you can't sacrifice control for speed.
Yep.
So as long as you've still got control, you can keep playing fast. I would love to see a change in our box scores from on a VJBL to go to rebounds. So stop statting points. Like, you know, obviously we need to add the scores up to the scoreboard, but every time there's a rebound, you should push a button as well. And then when we look, we don't see who scored the points. We just see who got the rebounds. That'd be... I want to have a chat to Greg about that. Probably, it'll probably come with a no, but I think I think that'd be great.
It'll be in the pipeline. It's, it'll be coming at some stage. But, I mean, realistically, that is something that nobody ever gives any credit to the rebounder. But they ignite the break in that space. Like, if you can grab the rebound and take that escape dribble first and push the ball and get away from where the D's at to be able to find your guards, who in theory should be running, life's pretty good in that space. Like, don't give the zone a chance. Like, do you... like you spoke about it at Casey, Bestie. Did you have a certain zone offense you ran with your Casey teams, or was it an adaption of what your normal structured offense
was like? Yeah, it was. So I think it's the first thing to me is when you're thinking about building your system, whether it's entirely on you or it's, you know, on your association's DOC, whichever way they've decided to go with it, you want to always have similar concepts. I think whether it's your man offense or your zone offense. So the first thing would be your floor spot starting point. You know, you don't want to get down because, you know, some coaches, they don't all just run back and park it. You know, like they might change it up each time. And for under 16, sometimes they have a hard time recognizing that and they might recognize it late in the shot clock. So I think it's important to have similar starting points in your, like, in your floor spots, whatever it might be. And then just some similar concepts. So I don't do this anymore, but when I first got to Casey, we ran a lot of flow stuff. So we had similar concepts with our posts. One always was up, one was always down. You know, if you were on the diag, you would generally be a cutter. You know, so those things were similar and it would work either way.
Yep.
You know, so I think that's important to have. So same as with when you're creating your man system, if you have totally different starting floor spots for everything, quite often, if defense is doing their job like we've just spoken about earlier, you're out of rhythm, like maybe your shot clock's low because there's been pressure up the floor, and then all of a sudden, oh, we're in the wrong spot, you know, like it just creates too much pressure.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. From a skill set perspective, Jenna, what else are we looking to add into our 16 kids? Because they are probably starting to see some on-ball screens and those types of things now. What else do they need?
Yeah, I think we're just continuing to build on everything that we have said. Yep. So it's still working on those closeouts because the offensive skill is getting better as we're going up in age groups. So our defensive skill needs to go up as well. So we're still focusing on that. Our off-ball positioning, being able to read off of an on-ball. Can I score? Is my roller open? Kick out. And making sure that we're not narrow-minded on our drives. We need to be able to see the whole floor and really open it up. I feel like when we're driving, we only see where we're going and not everywhere else on the floor. So I think that's something that coaches really need to focus on with their skill development for their players.
Yeah, absolutely. And small-sided games again, two-on-one reads, three-on-two reads. So the offense should have some levels of success. You've got more players, but defensively you're gonna have to scramble a little bit. You're gonna have to really work on your closeout, your help position late, those types of things, walling up at the ring. All that comes into it now in 16s because we're just dealing with better athletes now. Like, and I can only speak for myself, but these kids in 16s and 18s do not look anything like what I was playing against when I was under 16s and 18s. Like, these kids are bigger, stronger, more athletic. Like, it's ridiculous what some of these kids look like now. Like, it's nothing for an under 14 coach that's like 6'2" to be eyeballing their players at under 14 level. So when they hit 16s, it's all on. 18s, Bestie, everything on the table? Like, is it as simple as by the time they hit 18s, roll it all out or not?
I think so. I think you need to start to sprinkle in more challenging things for them to do defensively, depending on who they're guarding, where it is on the floor, that type of stuff. So I know a lot of, by now you should have maybe two or three off-ball screen coverages, two or three on-ball screen D coverages, but you can't just be like, all in this or we're all in that, like it needs to be. If it's this person and if it's, you know, this part of the floor, that type of stuff, I think that needs to start to happen because that'll be required of them in their next step, whether it's youth league or NBL One, college, whatever it might be. So I think an understanding of that and ability to do that, and you've got to challenge them with that throughout practice. It's not something you can throw to them at a game, like in a game, and expect them to say, all right, Robbie Coulter is killing off the on-ball. We're going to blitz him every time, but he's, you know, only good going right. So if it's on this wing, we're going to do it. On the other side, we're going to, you know, jam and under or whatever it might be. You know, if you expect them to just be able to do that in a game, it's not going to happen. Yep. You know, like you've got to challenge them and practice them, practice that regularly.
Yep. Words never spoken before. I'll give you the tip. Very rarely killed anyone off an on-ball. Killed people going to set an on-ball. Like there were plenty of moving screens over the years, but never coming off an on-ball. But Jenny, you're going through 18 trials at the moment. Where are some of the areas that you're seeing the players come through now? Because these are kids that have potentially been in a system for 6 to 7 years, whether it be BV or association level. What are some of the areas that you're sort of seeing at the moment that it's like we've got to focus a little bit more on this in under-18s?
Boxing out, I just feel everyone is ball watching and not finding a man. I can't stress that enough. I think the offensive rebounding is excellent, but we definitely need to find a body. I think moving up into 18s, especially the bottom age 18s, I feel like through, you know, 12s, 14s, 16s, they could do whatever they want in traffic and they haven't quite built their outside shot. So quite easily scouted by short closeouts and containing, and then they're sort of just driving in no matter what because in 16s they could get there whenever they wanted. So I think it's still developing. You know, shooting is so important. It's it creates so much for your offense, so much for you individually. So I think that's something that we need to continue to develop.
Yeah, and it's hard. Like, but I mean, I know you've spoken about this a couple of times before, Bestie. Like, you've got to value the box out by not just, okay, we've taken one shot and we walk off the floor and we're done at practice now. It's got to be a continual play to a stop or a score. And if you blow the coverage or you blow the box out or whatever the case may be, there's got to be something on the line there. It's not just a case of, hey, remember we need to box out. That's it. Like, there can't be anything else. Like, there's got to be more to it in that space. Are you seeing the same stuff on the boys' side, Bestie?
Yeah, a little bit. So on last Wednesday at our NPP All-State Compete, we had those exact rules. We had coaches that were designated to miss blockout was 3 slides, blow by was 3 slides. When we were in the full court, if you didn't get to a plug, it was 3 slides. If you didn't deny the kick ahead, it was the 3 slides. So, and they were just handed out once that rep was finished because we had plenty of athletes on the floor. So we just grabbed them off to the side and got to the point, you know, I've shared this story before, but the kids started to do it themselves, which was good. And I think if you're going to have an assistant coach or a team manager or a parent in the stands or whatever it is, stat that stuff. Yep. You know, like the old, you know, effort chart stuff. It's real.
Yep.
It's real. On the 18s, I think, you know, we're at the point now where slowly officiating is adapting to playing with verticality. You know, like at, you know, in the younger age groups, just driving in and crashing in was always rewarded with a foul, always. But now, you know, like with our ECC trials, you know, we've got multiple, you know, 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", you know, big. We've got one kid with a 6'11 wingspan that are just really getting better at their wall-ups. So just an ability to, first of all, finish against that if that's the correct decision and how to do that, not just crashing into them like outside of your cylinder, different finishes on off the backboard, high and soft, all of that. But then the reads with your passing and everything, I think is something that needs to evolve. And we had a couple of tough cuts from kids that were closer to the mark as bottom ages than what they were this year as top ages because they hadn't evolved in that decision-making process at the end of penetration.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. So when would you start talking about like team culture and team rules and all that sort of stuff? Like, would that be an under-12 thing? Would that be a, like, would you be waiting till they're older? Like,
no, always. It's just got to be appropriate. Yep. You know, like, it's age appropriate.
Yep. Not always the easiest thing to bring up with an under 12 kid. Like, I know.
But that culture is about effort that Darren spoke about before. That's what you're getting through the team, that we run in and out of drills, that this is the standard that we are setting. That is culture. You don't have to use the word culture for it to be, but in each age group, you're always talking about those things.
I've spoken about this before, that I think Victorian, well, and Australia, like, I've been involved in several states, but Australian junior basketballers are the most hydrated, you know, like, kids during practice. They have like seven, they have 60 minute practice, they have seven drink breaks. It's like, this is ridiculous. You know, so like, you're contributing to these poor practice standards as coaches if you keep doing that. And part of it is you've got to have a plan. You know, have a plan so you're ready to move on to the next thing, next thing, next thing. Don't use your drink break to figure out what you're going to do next. And I think that's how the two connect together. The culture stuff will start with, you know, getting to practice on time. If there is some sort of pre-practice activation that you're doing with them, that they should be doing that, you know, group warm-up, some sort of communication, competitive drill at the start of practice is always good. You know, just for example, last night, and I know we spoke about this on the pod before, you know, we do 3 one-hour blocks on the boys' side. So we do post first, then we do wings, then we do guards. So by the time the guards roll in, you know, it's 8 till 9 that session. You know, they've probably done a bit of homework, had some food, you know, like, they're a little bit, you know. We go straight into like partner passing drills for just like 2 or 3 minutes. And we've spoken about this before. It's not about the performance in the pass as it is just getting the juice going for the session. So first to 10 of, you know, you're a bounce pass, I'm a chest pass, that stuff. And it just gets the session right. The practice standards are good. And then we move on from there. And I think you can do that straight away, like Jenna said. That is your culture.
Yep.
Ready to practice when practice starts, run in and out, you know, have a coach, be the outlet, all of that.
How would you go about making that player driven then, Jenna? Like, how do you get buy-in from the players to hold other people accountable and to really drive those standards within the group?
Yeah, it's a good question. In early stages, that's the coach just getting on them each time. And I know that can be hard because you're focusing on so many other things. But I think if you coach that, you know, as soon as you start with that team, and yeah, put it onto the players. And if they don't do it, then what are the consequences for that?
Yep.
So that towards, you know, later in the season, the players are on it, they know exactly what they're doing, and then you don't have to be coaching that. So I think the earlier that you can focus on that, really put an emphasis on that, it's better for you as a coach.
Yeah. We spent, so in our FDP boys intro camp, I said to our coaches, you know, we feel often as coaches, you know, we shouldn't have to, whatever it might be. You know, these kids are the under 12 ones. We shouldn't have to coach talk, you know, and it happens at every level. These are the under 18 Vic Metro State team. We shouldn't have to coach blocking out. No, your job is to coach whatever's needed. That's just the reality of it. Like, whatever is needed, you got to get that done. And I said to our network coaches before the camp started, like, the first 20 minutes, like, if we've got to be on them and, you know, we had a coach outlet for each drill and we counted down from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 to get organized. And I said, let's just hone in on that. The basketball might not be awesome for the first 10, 15 minutes, but this will put us in good stead for the rest of the camp. Let's just really lock in on this stuff. And I think it was valuable. Like, that if it's going to take you guys as team coaches, you know, 2 or 3 sessions to get that stuff locked in, you will be so grateful you did it at the back end of the season.
Yep. And it is one of those areas where I think as coaches, we always compare. Like, you may have coached the under 14 ones one season. You've got them again the following season. The kids walk in the door and it's like, oh, this group isn't anywhere near as good as the last group. It's like, you're remembering the end of your last group. Remember the start of where they were. It probably wasn't the same spot.
And every group's going to be really different. You always can't coach every team you have the same.
Yep.
You need to coach, as Darren said, with what you need to coach for that particular group.
Yeah, and that goes down from skill sets to offenses to structures and all those types of things. Now, different if you're in a club system, so to speak, where they have everything laid out. It's like, well, look, there should be some assumed knowledge by the time they get to you, but coach the kids in front of you.
Mm.
And, I mean, Bestie, your initial point when we were talking about under 12s, got to have fun with it. Like that's such a big part of it. If they're not having fun because they're not learning and they're not being challenged, well, why would they continue coming back? So our job as coaches, and it really doesn't matter what age group. Like I love coaching under 12s, but every now and again I'll take an under 18s group because it's just fun, because you get to do some more cool stuff with it. The amount of times we'd roll in on a Sunday morning and the under 18s are a little bleary and it's like, yeah, okay, you've had an interesting night as to what you've rolled into for practice. What do you want to do? And they're like, hey, we just want to do some like scrimmage stuff. It's like, great. Like I can change the parameters around. Like you start there instead of starting there. I want two help defenders to run at the ball on the, like those types of things. There's ways to manipulate it, but find out what the players want and make it fun for them. And all of a sudden everything becomes a lot easier for you as a coach. So that's the moral of the story out there, coaches. Make it fun. I know you two have a meeting in 4 minutes, so I'm pretty content to wind this one up straight away. Coaches, thanks very much for listening once again. And if you have any questions, just hit us up on the email and I'll get back to you a little quicker than I have been over the last couple of weeks. I'm working through them very, very slowly, but I'm getting there on my email. I promise you that.
You're reading too many books, right?
I am. That's the biggest issue. It's the emails that come through that are like 8 paragraphs long. It's like, come on, man, dot points. Like, oh, I'm better in short spurts. But thank you very much, coaches, for listening. We'll catch everyone again next week. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.